All right. Okay, so we are holding on Kuf Zayin Omud Beis, about the middle of the Omud, the line begins Safka. We discussed yesterday a machlokas Rav and Shmuel. If a married woman comes to Beis Din saying that my husband is out of town and he hasn't left me money or anything from the Zonis, middle of Kuf Zayin Omud Beis, line begins Safka. So a married woman comes to Beis Din, and she says, my husband is out of town. He didn't leave me anything for Mizonis. Can you go and sell some of his property to obtain Mizonis for me? So we said during the first 3 months, everybody agrees that we say no because we don't expect that he left his house empty. If he went out of town, the pashtus, he left her something. After 3 months, so then we said it depends. If we hear that he's dead, then also everybody agrees that we can go ahead and arrange for her mizonis as an almana. She's entitled to mizonis. If we didn't hear that, then you have machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Rav says yes, because after all, there's a shibud to her. Shmuel says there's the two possibilities. We said either tsrori apasa, there's a possibility that maybe he left her a bundle of money to support herself with, meanwhile, or that he may have, or Rav Zvid that said, that was Rav Zvid said that actually, the papa said that he might have told her ahead of time, and she agreed to this, that he tells her, instead of you giving me your ma'aser diet, your earnings, or whatever it is you make during that time, and that in return I'll give you mizonis, instead you'll support yourself during this time with your ma'aser diet. So there's those possibilities, and therefore Shmuel says we can't arrange mizonis.
Well, that possible, she just swears that I didn't have that, my husband didn't tell me that, and she's built a club mizonis.
Okay. Fair point. She should be able to swear and collect, but I guess the right. But ultimately, what we say is, in other words, so we tell her you can borrow money and your husband will pay back afterwards or whatever. But for us to go without him being in town and go and start selling property of his for that, not necessarily can we do that. So we went into a long discussion, a whole sugya about that. We brought our Mishnah and several other Mishnayas and Braises about this. And we said there are some cases where Shmuel will make an exception, where neither of those possibilities applies. For example, Shemeres Yavam. We said the Yavam surely won't have left her a bundle of money. They're not that close together yet. And she's not obligated in giving him her Maisi Adeha as long as she's a Shemeres Yavam. So therefore, yes, if he runs away, we can give her Mizonis out of his property. Similarly, we said that with Tana, same thing. Tana, you're not going to give her a bundle of money, and she's not going to be able to make enough Maisi Adeha to support, to be able to make up for what she needs for food, besides which she can't be mochel anyway. So in such cases, Shmuel will agree that post can lom mizonis, but otherwise not. So now the Gemara says, what's the bottom line? What is that? What's the story in the end? What's the halacha? Like Rav or like Shmuel? So the Gemara says, ki osir Rav Dimi Omer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he told as follows. Such a case was brought in front of Rebbe in Beis Sha'arim. We learned a few blocks ago that Rebbe, at one point in his life, lived in Beis Sha'arim, which is a town in the north of Eretz Yisrael. Later on, we said he wasn't feeling so well, so they moved to Tzipori, which is on top of a mountain, so it's a better climate for his health. So they brought the case to Rebbe and Beis Sha'arim, or Pasuk L'Mizonis, and Rebbe said she is entitled to Mizonis in a case like this, which would be like Rav. Lifnei Rabbi Shmuel b'Tzipori, but a case like that was brought to Rabbi Shmuel and Tzipori, v'loy Pasuk L'Mizonis, and Rabbi Shmuel decided, like Shmuel, that we do not give for Mizonis. So the Gemara continues, so Rav Dini continues, Tohi bar Rav Yechanan, where Rav Yechanan reported both those things, that Rebbe and Rabbi Shmuel did respectively, but Rav Dimi says, Rabbi Yochanan, when he learned that, he wondered, Rabbi Shmuel shalet pasik l'mizonis. What led Rabbi Shmuel to say that she shouldn't be entitled to mizonis in a case like this? What is the case where the Bnei Konim, Golem, and Chonon argue in our Mishnah? Is the case Elul Inin Shrua? The question is, do we make her swear? So you were talking about before, Ellie, about whether she should swear. So yeah, in the Mishnah, Chonon says that at the end, either when we find out that her husband is dead, or when we find out her husband is dead and she wants to collect her ksuba, or when the husband comes back alive and says, in fact, I did leave her mizonis, then at that point, we'll make her swear whether it was so or not. But that's besoit, but not betchila. Chonon says when she first comes to demand mezonis, we're not going to make her swear. And Bnei Kohenim Golem said to Shava betchila or besoit, we will make her swear at the beginning when she first wants to collect mezonis and at the end.
So after 3 months.
The Mishnah didn't say anything about 3 months, but we're talking about whenever it is that she comes to Beis Din to demand the mezonis, then Chonon holds, we don't make her swear then. Bnei Kohenim Golem say we do, but everyone, and then they both agree that she would have to swear at the end when we hear that her husband is dead or her husband comes back, as the case may be, and then she's going to have to swear. But Rabbi Yochanan is wondering, why is Rabbi Shmuel, now granted, okay, Rabbi Shmuel's a Tana, of course he can disagree with Chonon and he can disagree with the Bnei Kohenim Golem, but what's his Svara? We can understand the Svara, why she should have to swear only at the end or at the beginning and the end, but why should Rabbi Shmuel be saying, Shalat Pasek Lamezonis, that he didn't give him a Zonis at all? They only argue about whether she has to swear at the beginning. They both agree you give him a Zonis. So why would Rabbi Shmuel, where is Rabbi Shmuel getting the idea to say that he wouldn't give him a Zonis? And Amalek of Shaman Ba'aba, sort of Shaman Ba'aba tells Rabbi Yechanan, this is all Rabbi Dimi reporting what happened in the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. B'chal, you have Chachamim like Rabbi Dimi in an earlier generation. You had Ula in Rabbi Dimi's times. You also had Robin. You have various Chachamim who used to travel back and forth regularly between Eretz Yisrael and Babel, and they would, in each place, they would report. They'd come to Babel and report what the Chachamim are teaching and discussing in Eretz Yisrael, and they'd go to Eretz Yisrael and report what the Chachamim are teaching and discussing in Babel, so that way they could stay in sync. So Rav Shaman Ba'aba says to Rav Yechanan, Kvar Tugma Rabbeinu Shmuel B'Bavel, Kishe Shomu Bo Shemes. You should know, our Rebbe Shmuel, Rav Shaman Ba'aba, we actually learned earlier in the Masechta, we had a story involving him and Shmuel's daughters who were taken captive. It mentioned over there that Rav Shaman Ba'aba was actually related to Shmuel. But aside from that, anyway, he had learned by Shmuel and Babel, so he respected him and called him Rabbeinu Shmuel. So he says, you should know, Rabbeinu Shmuel and Babel already explained to Shomu Bo Shemes that on Mishnah is talking about specifically when they heard he died. So then Shmuel agrees, you give him his onus, and the only machlokas is, does she have to take a shvua or not? But not when we haven't heard that. That's when Shmuel would say that, no, the Mishnah is not addressing that case at all. Omalei, so Rabbi Yochanan answers him, Pasrisi Bokoleh, hi, have you explained it that much? In other words, you're going to such a doichet to explain on Mishnah to make it work according to Shmuel's Shitta and to make it work according to Rabbi Shmuel's Shitta and therefore forcing an explanation in the Mishnah that it's talking about the Sheshomu Boishemes, which the Mishnah didn't hint at any such thing. So Rabbi Yochanan says, I don't really accept that as being a valid explanation of the Mishnah, and therefore I'm left with the question, why Rabbi Shmuel, on what basis Rabbi Shmuel would say that you don't give him his onus? That's what Jimmy reported that. The point is, the fact that we see that Rabbi Yochanan reacted like that shows that we should say, that's a reason to say that Halacha is like Rab over Shmuel. Because we see that Rabbi Yochanan also agrees with Rab's Shitta, and he finds Shmuel's Shitta, or Rabbi Shmuel's Shitta, incomprehensible. Then the Gemara says, he also Robin, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, and the usual way was that first Rabbi Dini would come, and he would give a report, and afterwards Robin would come, and he would correct sometimes details in what Rabbi Dini had said, and give a different version of it or something. So he said, Omar, he said the story was a little bit different. It was the other way around, actually. It was the other way around. The case was brought to Rebbe in Beis Sha'arim, and he said that she does not get Mezonis. Then it was brought to Rabbi Shmuel, and he said she is entitled to Mezonis. So the opinions were the other way around. And the rest of it is Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Ma Ra Rebbe Shalat Pasekla, and Rabbi Yechanan now is wondering on Rebbe's Shitta, why would he say she's not entitled to Mezonis? Again, we said in our Mishnah, Chonon and the Bnei Kohenim Golem argue only whether she has to take a Shavua at the beginning to collect Mezonis. Av Mezonis Yahavinallah. Either way, they both agree she gets Mezonis. So where is Rebbe getting the idea that she shouldn't have Mezonis? And according to this version also, Omelet of Shaman Ba'aba, Kvar Tugum of Shmuel B'Babel, Kshomel B'Shemes, Rav Shaman Ba'aba tells him, you should know that Shmuel explained it in Babel, that the Mishnah is talking about when we heard that he died, which we said, by the way, earlier in the Sugya, when we learned it yesterday, that Tosfos discussed, does that mean Shoshomel Boy, that we actually have two Edim came to that effect, or does it just mean that there were Edim who heard from other Edim, or maybe there was only a rumor, etc.? Anyway, Omalei Pasrisu Bakulahai, and again Rabbi Yochanan reacts and he says, well, you're kvetching ayin so much in the Mishnah in order to be able to explain it in accordance with Shmuel's Shitta. So, in other words, again, we see from that story also that the same thing as the first story, all it is we flipped around the opinions, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi, which one said she gets mezonos and which one not. So the Gemara says, the bottom line in this machlokas is the halacha is like Rab, therefore a poskin mezonos for eshes ish. So if an eshes ish comes to Beis Din and says, my husband left me without any mezonos, we do arrange mezonos for her. And that means if necessary, Beis Din will go sell some of his property in order to give her food. This is talking about, again, after the 3 months. He said within 3 months, even Rab would agree that we don't, because he surely didn't leave his house empty. Since we're paskining halachas, the Gemara mentions other halachas in this connection as well. By the way, also the halacha is like Rav Huna in the name of Rab, the Amar of Huna Amar Rab, the Chola Isha Shetayma Labayla, Eini Nizonis Veini Oisa. A woman is able unilaterally to tell her husband, I don't want you to give me Mizonis, and I'm not giving you my Maisa Yodai. Now, before in the Sugi over here, we were talking about the husband saying the other way around, saying, see, Masi Yodai from Mizonis Ayin. That, if he wants to do that, she has to agree to it. Because not necessarily are her maisa yada enough for her to support herself. But in where she herself says, Eini nizonis v'eini oisa, meaning that she knows she's making enough, she's producing enough wool or making it enough of whatever it is, that she is able to support herself comfortably, then she has the right unilaterally to tell her husband that from now on, with an Eini nizonis v'eini oisa.
That's also, there's a certain amount of money he has to give her to the tashitim before the basamim.
No, that's something else. We're talking about just specifically as far as mezonos. Other things he's still responsible for, but yeah.
The mana
b'chol shavua that she can use, for example, to go to the bathhouse or to the laundry or whatever, that's a different thing, yeah. Here we're talking about her basic mezonos. Which we had a machloikas about this earlier in the Masechta. So now the Gemara is informing us you should know the halacha is like Rav Huna now. Which we did say over there, though, the Rishonim say, now she can't keep going back and forth. Once she says, Eini nizonis and Eini oisa, then that's it. You know, we hold her to that indefinitely, because otherwise, you know what, she's going to say Eini nizonis Eini oisa for a while, and she's going to keep her mais yada, and then she's going to turn around and say, you know what, actually, it's not enough, I need nizonis, so we can't keep going back and forth. If she gets pregnant, that's different.
What does mezonos include?
Mezonos includes mezonos. It includes her food. Maybe also it includes her clothing. I mean, not necessarily. You have like this. There are altogether 10 things that the husband is. No, check that. There are. What is it? There are 3 things that the husband is chayev to his wife, and then there's a bunch of things that he's entitled to from her. There is. There's more than 3. There's 10 things, I think, 3 midaraisa and 7 midarabanan that he's responsible for. He's chayev for sherek sus v'oina, it says in the Torah. And then there's a bunch of others. He's chayev to ransom her if she gets captured. He's responsible for her burial expenses if she dies, etc. Yes. So those are all darabanan. And we said for each one of those, the Chachamim set up something parallel to that, but he's entitled to instead. In place of the mezonos, he gets a maisa yada in place of the fact that he's going to have to bury who he gets payers and so on and so forth. Yeah.
All these are included under mezonos.
That's what I'm saying. Mezonos would be her food. Then there's a separate thing where he has to provide her clothing. There's a separate thing where he has to ransom her if she gets captured, etc. Mezonos, preposterous, would include just mezonos. Yeah. Yeah. Just her food.
Food,
yeah.
In other words.
Just in other words, just food. Okay. Since the Gemara is giving us a halacha like Rab, and the Gemara also digresses and mentions that point as well, there are also Mephoshim who point out that since in the sugya we had over here the point about Mizonis and Maisiyadeh, so therefore the Gemara takes the opportunity to pass in halacha like that as well. And also the Hilchsa Kabaseh de Rab Zvid Bekunya. Also, by the way, the halacha is like Rav Zvid when it comes to kunya. Now, this has nothing at all to do with our sugya. And again, one possibility is that the Chachamim learned these 3 halachas together in the Beis Medrash, and therefore now, when we're passing like one, then the Gemara takes the chance to tell us the halacha about the other one. The other explanation, the Shulchan Aruch Kabetz says, since earlier in the sugya we mentioned Rav Zvid's explanation of Shmuel's statement over here about Ein Poskin Mezonos L'Eishes Ish. So now we said in the end the halacha is not like Shmuel, but nevertheless, the Gemara grabs the opportunity to tell us the halacha is like Rav Zvid in a different game. What is kunya? Rashi explains it means earthenware kalim that are glazed with a lead glaze. Now the point is earthenware kalim themselves absorb. We know they can't kasher them. So what about if they're glazed with lead? Now, nowadays, nobody would do that. Lead is dangerous. We know that lead is dangerous. They didn't know that back then. So they would sometimes glaze them with a little lead glaze. Now, the question is, what's the genus for them as far as kashrus? Can you kasher them? Or can you do them, if they were used for yayin nesech or for chometz or whatever, can you do anything with them? So the Gemara is saying that halacha is like him with kunya. Now, Tosfos disagrees and says, and I explained that elsewhere in Shas we find the word kunya, and there it doesn't mean lead, it means something else. Rather, Tosfos explains that it means it's glazed with glass. It's glazed with a glass glaze rather than a, so now you have, for example, china. You buy china ware in the store. It's earthenware. It's pottery. And it's glazed with a, so nowadays the glaze is basically made out of some kind of chemicals or whatever, but in the old days they would actually use a thick glass glaze on them. So now, Rav Zvid is going to tell us a halacha about such kalim, and the Gemara is saying the halacha is like them. So what does it mean? The Amr Rav Zvid, hani moni de kunya, when it comes to these kalim of kunya, again, lead line the points of Rashi, glass line the points of Tosfos, chivri v'uchmi, if they are white or black, sharu, then they're mutter if you use them during the year for chametz, and now you want to use them on Pesach. Or if at one point they were used for yayin nesach, and now you want to use them for kosher or wine, then they're mutter because since they're glazed with lead or with glass, they don't absorb, and therefore they're able to be captured. Yeruki asir, but Rav Zvid says the green ones are osir because the green ones are made, the fact that they have a greenish color comes from the fact that there's a mineral named alum mixed in with the lead or with the glass, as the case may be. And that is, that causes them to be very absorbent. That mineral has the property, when you mix it into the lead glaze or into the glass glaze, that it makes it much more absorbent. So therefore, it absorbs the ainesach, or it absorbs the chametz. And the Gemara, which, by the way, Tosfos brings from a Gemara in Psachim and a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that there is a different opinion in the Gemaras over there. There's the opinion of Maremar, says that when it comes to Pesach, he says all of them would be osur, because all of them, even whether they're glazed with lead or with glass or whatever, or whether it was plain earthenware, either way, they're going to absorb too much. Because when they're used with chametz, they're used with heat. We're talking about that chametz is cooked in them, therefore it absorbs. On the other hand, with yayin nesach, Marema would say that even the green ones, when it comes to yayin nesach, would be mutter, because since the yayin nesach is cold, it doesn't absorb enough for it to be a problem.
How would you kasher someone that's without water?
So we have to kasher with hot water, yeah. The usual rule is to boil it tach pelte. Whatever method it absorbed with is how you have to kasher it. But the point is, Rav Zvid is saying that the green ones are, that they absorb too much, and therefore you have, they it gets into the earthenware underneath, and therefore you can't kasher them anymore. Or Tosfos says what it is the glass glaze itself, because it contains this alum, because it contains this mineral, the glaze itself absorbs too much, and there's no way to kasher it afterwards. When you think about it, Tosfos says, how is glass made? It's made out of sand. So in that sense, it's like clay cheres in a way. Which, by the way, you have a famous thing that you have adayem azeh. You have a difference between Sfardim and Ashkenazim as far as plain glass. Can you kasher it? Sfardim hold, and Tosfos mentions that point over here, regular glass does not really absorb. So there shouldn't be a problem. And in fact, Sfardim hold that glass kalim don't even need to be kashered. They don't absorb b'chlal. On the other hand, we Ashkenazim hold kakev. Because glass is made out of sand, and therefore in that sense it's similar to clay cheres, fine. Chemically, it may not absorb. If you do a chemical test on it, you may not find. But as a matter of halacha, we have to consider that it absorbs like earthenware does, and therefore can't be captured.
So you shouldn't use it for milk examples.
So for cold is different. Again, cold, it doesn't really absorb. We're not talking about that. We're talking about if any heat is used with it. Yeah. So, what?
Yatsaladisboy,
right. Yeah, the definition of heat for this purpose is anything above Yatsaladisboy, which I suppose you can say is somewhere around 110 degrees. What?
Is enamel, the halacha about enamel, is it derived from what we're talking
yes,
about?
Yes, enamel
here?
Is in that sense similar, and for that reason, for example, enamel sinks, as far as I know, can't be captured. Yeah. Yeah, we have the same issue, yeah.
So Ashkenazim cannot eat on it, but Sfardim apparently may?
I think so, but I mean, again, the difference, a sink is used with hot water. If you had, for example, an enamel keli that was used only with cold things, then it would be different, yeah. Yeah, so the Gemara...
No, I'm talking...
Yeah, you're talking about a sink or something, yeah. Yeah.
Hot water or hot liquid, Sfardim use it on enamel?
I don't know exactly, but I think it might be the same. I'm not sure. Anyway, the Gemara continues, now that would apply only if, even this that Reb Zvi is saying, the black or the white ones are mutter when they're glazed, is only if they don't have cracks in them. Aval ispo kartufni, but if they have cracks, asiri, then it's going to be osir, even the white or the black ones, because then the yai nesech or chometz, as the case may be, goes in through the cracks and ends up inside the earthenware, and again, you can't pass your earthenware.
Okay.
So again, the Gemara
glazes it when it's still in good condition.
Well, no, the point is not that whether the earthenware has cracks. The point is whether the glaze has cracks. If you glazed it many years ago, and over time it's developed cracks, and now after that somebody used it for yain nesach, or somebody used it for chametz, then you're going to have a problem.
Okay.
Now, so we started the parak by saying that there were the two Dayonic Zeris in Yerushalayim. Their names were Admon and Chonon ben Avishalom. And we said Chonon disagreed with Chachamim on two dinim, and Admon disagreed with them on seven. So now we learned the first one that Chonon disagreed with them on, which was this discussion about a married woman who wants to collect mezonos, when she has to swear. So again, according to Rav, this is talking about whether we found out the husband is dead or not, and according to Shmuel, only if we found out that he was dead. Now comes the second machlokas between Chonon and the other Chachamim. The Mishnah says, Misha holach l'medina seyan, if a person went overseas, or the husband went overseas, but amad echad pirnes es ishtay, somebody got up on his own and supported his wife. So he figured for himself, nebach, she was left without anything, instead of her having to go and borrow money, I'll go and do her a favor. The question is now, later on, does he have the right to collect? Does he have the right later on to collect from her or from her husband? I laid out X amount of money, so now I should be reimbursed. So Chonon Oimer Ibid Es Ma'osav. Chonon said he lost his money. Because after all, Rashi says, if the husband had told him, or for that matter, if the husband had told him, you lend me and I'll pay you back, then of course it would be a regular choiv, the guy is entitled to be reimbursed. But here, he lent her, so Rashi says that actually if he lent her money for her mezonos on condition that she'll pay, then fine, actually he does end up getting reimbursed. Because Rashi brings from the Gemara earlier that says that if it was a young girl and she was mine, then in that scenario like that, then she has to pay that. But ordinarily, yes, the husband would be required to. What we're talking about in the Mishnah is that he didn't even say, I'm lending it to you. He just said, I'll take care of you for the time being. Now the question is, do we say that afterwards the husband has to repay him or not? So Chonon says no. Again, the Bnei Kohenim Gdolim disagreed with him. We said the other day, there were many people who had been Kohenim Gdolim late in the time of the second Bais Hamikdash, which is when Chonon lived as well. Some of these Kohenim Gdolim were better, some of them were not so good, but whatever the case, it seems that their children were Talmud Chachamim enough to have a say in a matter of halacha. So they disagreed. The guy, this third party, should be able to swear how much he spent, and then he should be able to get reimbursed, even if he didn't do it as explicitly as a loan. So the Gemara says, so the Mishnah continues. Again, like in the first Mishnah, Rav Dosi ben Horkinas agrees with the Bnei Kohenim Gdolim, but Rav Yechon ben Zakkai, Yofa Amar Chonon, Rav Yechon ben Zakkai disagrees with the Bnei Kohenim Gdolim and with Rav Dosi ben Horkinas. He says, no, Chonon said correctly. This guy lost his money. In effect, it's a figure of speech. It's like he put his money on the horn of a deer. Imagine you do that. You attach some money to the horn of a deer. You're never going to see it again. The deer is going to run faster than you. In fact, the Shittim Kobetzis brings a cute idea. He says from Dorshe Rishumas, he says when a deer sheds its antlers, it goes and buries them someplace in a crevice, in a rock. So you're for sure never going to find them, let alone you're not going to find any money that was tied to them. So yeah, so it's a figure of speech, meaning in other words, it's like he made a bad investment. Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here, and a lot of Rishonim get into a discussion. We're going to discuss now in the Gemara about when a person pays a debt on behalf of somebody else, is he entitled to reimbursement? Tosfos has a long discussion of it over here. In particular, Tosfos says there's a difference maybe between most kinds of debts and this that the husband has to give mezonos to his wife. Most kinds of debts, a person can't get out of that easily. If he owes money to somebody, then he's going to have to pay back no matter what. Except we're going to mention in the Gemara, there might be a special case where they made a deal to begin with that the other guy won't be able to demand the debt. He'll pay it back whenever he feels like it. But ordinarily, a debt, once a person owes it, there's no easy way to get out of it. So therefore, you could argue that yes, if a person paid a debt on behalf of somebody else, sure, later on, so Reuven paid a debt on behalf of Shimon, sure, eventually Shimon's going to have to reimburse Reuven. He gained money from it. So Rabbeinu Tam wants to say, says Tosfos, that only in this case of Mefarnes as Ishtoi would Chanan say that would Chanan say and Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai say that he lost his money and he put it on Keren Atzvi, because after all, not necessarily did the husband have to give so much mezonos. She could have managed with less. It's mezonos, so she needs a certain amount of food per day or per week or whatever, but she could manage to live on a little bit less. So therefore, the husband wouldn't necessarily have had to pay this full amount, and therefore maybe we shouldn't hold him responsible for this full amount. This other guy was willing to support her generously, maybe the husband shouldn't be on the hook for it. On the other hand, Tosfos, the other Balei Tosfos, and many other Rishonim disagree with that and say that no, this concept might apply to other kinds of loans as well. If Reuven pays off Shimon's loan without Shimon having asked him to, without him being an Orev, without anything like that yet. So the Gemara starts off. Tnan Hossam. We learn in a Mishnah in Nedarim, so we'll be getting to it in a few weeks, Bez Hashem. Hamudr Hanam et Haveva. If a person made a neder not to have Hanah from somebody else, and now you can have, we're going to discuss in Nedarim, there can be a case where that's mutual, where Reuven has made a neder that he won't have Hanah from Shimon, and Shimon has made such a neder about Reuven. Now, people shouldn't necessarily be doing that. It seems like a lack of Avas Yisrael. We've discussed it before in our Masechta. But nevertheless, it could happen for whatever reason. A person makes such a neder. One possibility is Bechlal. It is a good thing to make a neder. It is a good thing for a person to make a neder when he sees that he's been overindulgent in something. So imagine you have a person who up until now has been, up until now, let's say Reuven has been constantly depending on Shimon for things. So now he finally sobers up and realizes, you know, I can't keep doing that. So you know what? He's going to buttress it with a neder for a little while, for the next week or month or whatever it is. I absolutely will not have any Hanah from Shimon. And now suppose Shimon was the same way, then he might make the same neder reciprocally. Whatever the case. So now you have various issues, what they're allowed and not allowed to do with each other. So the Mishnah says, Shoika loyas shikloi, nevertheless, the one who is mudah hanah mechaveira. So let's talk about the first case where let's talk about the plain case where only one of them made the neder that he won't have hanah from the other one. So Reuven has made a neder he won't have hanah from Shimon for the next month, let's say. Now, nevertheless, Shoika loyas shikloi, Shimon is allowed to give on Reuven's behalf the machzah shekel, as we're going to discuss in a few lines why. He is also allowed to pay off a debt that Shimon owns. So again, according to Rabbeinu Tam and Tosfos, that would be specifically the kind of debt that we're talking about in our Mishnah, namely where Shimon is obligated to support his wife and Reuven is obligated to support his wife, and Shimon is helping him in that regard, but not necessarily would it work with other kinds of loans. According to the Balei Tosfos, according to the other Balei Tosfos, and according to most other Rishonim, the Rif and other Rishonim, it could apply to other kinds of debts as well, as we'll see in the Gemara. And also Shimon can return a lost object that Reuven lost. Over Mokum, Shenotlin Schar, now in a place, there are places, or there are scenarios where a person gets a reward, where a person gets payment for returning a lost, no, not necessarily for feeding, but for the actual tircha of returning a lost object. Which you can have two scenarios that Rambam explains. There were places where they had such a minyan. There were places where the minyan was that if Shimon finds Reuven's donkey lost, for example, and takes the trouble to return it, then the expectation is that Reuven is going to give Shimon a tip. The other possibility that Ram learns in the Nedarim doesn't have to be that. You could be talking about, let's say, where Shimon actually had to take off time from work to return the donkey, in which case the Mishnah in Bava Metzia tells us that he is entitled to be reimbursed at least a percentage of what he lost during that time. So anyway, so now, so says Tosfos, the Gemara explains there in the Nedarim, suppose that both of them are also to each other. If only Reuven was also to have Hanah from Shimon, that wouldn't be such a big deal. Because fine, Shimon could be moichel on the fee, and that's that. He's not getting any Hanah from Reuven, so we're good. But what happens if Shimon has also made a reciprocal neder not to have Hanah from Reuven? Now, if he's moichel on that, and says, I don't need the tip, then he's causing Hanah to Reuven. So therefore, tipol schar lehekdesh. So the tipol hanah lehekdesh. Therefore, the Mishnah says, in that case, the amount of the tip would instead, or the amount of the tip, or the amount of the schar batol or whatever, would go to hekdesh instead. Shimon can't take it because that would be having hanah from Reuven. He can't be moichel it because that would be giving hanah to Reuven. And we're talking about again, there's this reciprocal neder. So therefore, they have to take that amount of money and give it to hekdesh.
Can't pay back after 30 days.
Well, let's say, for example, the neder was open-ended. Yeah, if it was after 30 days, then maybe we could talk about it. Okay, so the question is, B'shlema shoyka loyas shikloi. I understand why in this scenario, Shimon can give machs a shekel on behalf of Reuven, because mitzvah kavod. In that, he's doing a mitzvah. In other words, he's not actually causing Reuven a hana. Ditznan, because we learn in a Mishnah in Shkolim, with Tanya, really, it's a Braisa, terminal obud, when, now like this, we talked about the other day, they have the Machzah Shekel is collected and placed in the chamber of the Bais HaMikdash. Three times a year, a person goes in there and takes out boxes of money from there to be used to buy the korbanos and pay the other operating expenses of the Bais HaMikdash for the next time, until the next Yom Tov. From the, there's a chamber, there's a room in the Bais HaMikdash where they put all the coins that come in from Machzah Shekel from all over the world. They put them in a certain room in the Bais HaMikdash, and then three times a year, before Pesach, before Shavuos, and before Sukkot, somebody goes in there. They said that they send the Shliach Beis Din in, and he fills up a box or boxes full of coins and takes them out of there, and that's what they spend on the korbanos and on the other operating expenses of the Bais HaMikdash until the next Yom Tov. Yeah. So now, so the Braisa says, terminal obur, when they take the Machzah Shekel from the room, and they're going to be spending it on the, korbanos, they have in mind also Machzah Shekel that was lost, which Rashi explains means, suppose somebody sent his Machzah Shekel to the Bais HaMikdash and it got lost on the way. So they still have him in mind. The point is, we still want that all the Jewish people should have a share in the korbanos. Even if a person didn't end up giving his Machzah Shekel, we don't want him to not be included in the korbanos. So they have in mind that the money that we're taking out of the Lishka includes also those people who sent Machzah Shekel that was lost on the way. But Allah Govri, also for what was collected, meaning that it hasn't reached here yet. It was collected, it's on its way, but it hasn't reached here yet. Vala osid ligobos, or what's yet going to be collected. So he's going to give it later on, but even as of now, he has a chelek in the truma and in the korbanos. He's missing out a mitzvah, but nevertheless, he's still included. The korbanos are still being brought on behalf of him. So therefore, Rashi explains, so it comes out therefore, so the person failed, so in our scenario, Reuven failed to give Machzah Shekel. So he's losing out on a mitzvah. He wasn't paying the mitzvah, as I say, to give Machzah Shekel. When Shimon gives it on his behalf, all that does is it benefits Hekdesh, that now Hekdesh is not lacking that Machzah Shekel. But he's not giving Reuven any hana, because Reuven would have had a share in the korbanos regardless.
But Reuven doesn't have to go bring the one himself because it was done on his behalf.
Right, but the point is, even that's what Rashi is saying. Even if Reuven never ends up giving Machzah Shekel on for that year, nevertheless, all it is you lost out on the mitzvah, but nevertheless, it's not, in other words, Rashi seems to be saying that Gizborim wouldn't come to Reuven afterwards and say, where's your Machzah Shekel? We need you to give it or else. Tosfos has a number of questions about that. And so Tosfos explains, Ha'ovud would be that the collectors of the Machzah Shekel received the Machzah Shekel from him, and then they lost it afterwards. Ha'govui would be that he sent it with a shliach, and the shliach lost it on the way, and it was la'achar shenitzma ha'truma. Tosfos stresses it has to be that it was lost after the first time when they took the truma, when they took the box of coins out of the lishka. Because up until that point, we would say the person is chayav b'achor yosei. If his Machzah Shekel was lost before it reaches the Bais HaMikdash, he would be responsible to make it up. But once the truma, once the money has been taken out of the lishka, then at that point, since we had everybody in mind, since Shliach had everybody in mind, then at that point, if a person's Machzah Shekel hasn't reached the Bais HaMikdash by then in fact he's not chayav b'achor yosei, he's not going to have to make up for it. And then Allah Osid Ligobus would mean something that's eventually going to be collected. So therefore, as the Tosfos says, when we're saying over here that Shimon can pay Reuven's Machzah Shekel, we would have to be talking about the cases where, in fact, Reuven is not Chayav B'achor Yosef. So you're right. In other words, Tosfos is saying, if, for example, if, let's say, they're collecting during Adar, because they have to start using the new money, Rosh Chodesh Nissan. So Tosfos is learning, if Reuven had not given his Machzah Shekel on Adar, and now, during Adar, Shimon, there's a neder in effect that Reuven is not allowed to have hana from Shimon. If during Adar, Shimon were to be giving that Machzah Shekel on behalf of Reuven, that would be a problem. Because then he's preventing, otherwise the Gizborim would come to, otherwise the Shulchanos, the money changers who are responsible for collecting the Machzah Shekel, would go to Reuven and say, "Nu, pay up, and if not, we're going to take a mashkin from you." So therefore, Shimon is benefiting Reuven. But after the Chodesh Nissan, Tosfos is saying they can't do that anymore, because at that point, already the first truma has been taken from the Lishka, the first boxes of coins have been taken out. At that point, they had in mind, we're doing it on behalf of all Jewish people, whether they gave Machzah Shekel or not. At that point, the Shulchanos, the money changers, are not going to be going to Reuven and harassing him for it anymore. Therefore, at that point, Shimon is not causing a hanah for Reuven. So we understand then why it is that at least in some cases Shimon is able to pay Machta Shekel on behalf of Reuben. He's not actually causing him anah. Now, when it comes to returning a lost object, you could say, essentially, he's doing a mitzvah. It's not considered that he's giving a hanah to Reuben. But we have to ask, in that case, how is Shimon allowed to pay a debt that Reuben owes? Isn't he causing Reuben a direct benefit by that? Because now Reuben's Baal Choyv is not going to go demand the payment from him or take a mashkin from him or what have you. And the answer is, Amar Rabosh, Yohamani Chonon. So Rav Oshia says, you're right, you should know that that Mishnah in Nedarim would have to follow the opinion of Chonin in our Mishnah, the Amar Ibn Etzma'isa, where we're saying in our Mishnah, where, again, nobody asked him to go and support this woman while her husband is out of town. He did it voluntarily. Nobody told him, lend us money and we'll pay you back afterwards, or anything like that. So therefore, so Chonin, the same way as in our Mishnah, Chonin says, Ibid Esma Oisav, meaning that we don't consider that he caused a benefit to the husband, such that the husband, or the wife for that matter, should have to pay him back. In the same way, in that Mishnah, in Nedarim, is why he's allowed to pay the debt. So he's not asking Reuben, should I pay your debt for you? And it's certainly not that Reuben is coming and saying, I need you to pay for it for me. That would for sure be also because the neder is in effect. But we're saying that Shimon voluntarily, on his own, went without asking Reuben and paid off his debt. So now, so according to Chonam, then in fact, we can't consider that he gave Reuben the kind of hanah that Reuben should owe him one for it, because the fact is, Chonam is saying, Ibid Esma'isav. Again, according to Rabbeinu Tam, and also Rabbeinu Hananel holds the same way, this would be specifically if the debt we're talking about is that Reuben had to support his wife, but he was out of town, and instead Shimon did it. And the reason is, again, as Rabbeinu Tam said, because after all, she could have managed on less. So therefore, we can't say that he should be, we can't say the husband should be on the hook for everything. With other kinds of debts, on the other hand, we would say that no, because ultimately he's going to have to pay the debt regardless. On the other hand, the other Balei HaTosfos and the Rif and most other Rishonim learn that no, the same thing would apply with other kinds of debts as well, because you never know. After all, Reuben could have gone to his Baal Choyv and sweet-talked him into forgiving the debt. So therefore, you still could say that not necessarily would he have had to pay it back. So now we can tell Shimon, why should I have to repay you when you voluntarily went and paid my debt? I could have gone and sweet-talked the guy into forgiving the debt. Yeah.
What does the woman have to prove? What does the woman have to prove that she had sufficiency to not to receive the mizanos during that time?
So we said in the previous Mishnah, and the Sugya on it, we said that during the first 3 months, we assume that her husband left her something. After that, we had the machloikas. So again, if we learn the previous Mishnah, like Rab, then regardless, in all cases, she's entitled to mizonos. She just has, according to Chonon, she only has to swear at the end, and according to Bnei Kohen and Gerven, at the beginning and the end, and according to Shmuel, only if Shomer Bo Shemes. Otherwise, basically, they're not going to arrange mizonos for her at all. Here we're talking about a different scenario. Here we're talking about that somebody voluntarily goes and offers her mizonos during the time when her husband is away. So, nobody asked him to lend, and she didn't go to him and say, lend me money. Her husband, certainly before he left town, didn't say, go lend my wife money, and because in those cases, they would be responsible to repay. We're talking about that Shimon, purely on his own, saw, you know what, look, this poor woman is struggling, let me go help her. So now, is he entitled to reimbursement later? That's machlokas and amish. So nothing to do with whether she claims she has mizonos available or not. The point is, this guy voluntarily went and gave it to her. Okay.
So
that's volunteers. What?
If he volunteers, we're not asking her to show that she has enough money. Why is that?
Why? Well, what's the difference? The point is, he volunteered. That's Chonon's thing. He said, okay, and that's fine. The Bnei Kohen and Berlim are saying in the end, the guy can swear how much he laid out and then show up to reimburse him.
I understand that he may have volunteered knowingly, knowing that she didn't have enough to support herself. She may have
that may be,
said
and that was very nice of him, and he did a great chesed. Chonon's not going to say he didn't do a great chesed, but he's going to say he's not entitled to be reimbursed. Obviously, if she wants to reimburse him, if the husband wants to reimburse him, doesn't they? But they're not obligated to up yalach. Okay, anyway, let's go on. So we have one answer that Rav Oshia is saying that Mishnah in Nedarim would be only according to Chonon. Because according to the Bnei Kohen and Golem and according to Rav Yosef and Hokinas, he did give him a hanah. The same way as they're saying in our Mishnah that this third party who supported the woman is entitled to be reimbursed. The same way they would say over there, if Shimon voluntarily goes and pays Reuben's debt, then Shimon later on is entitled to reimbursement from Reuben, showing that he gave him a hanah. But there's a neder in effect of no hanah. Therefore, he can't do that. So it could only be according to Chana, says Rav Oshia. On the other hand, Rava says, actually, you could make that Mishnah in Nedarim work even according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah. The Chachamim, meaning the Bnei Koyim, Gerlim, and Rabbi Yechon Mazak. Because Chachab Maya Skinen, because the case in that Mishnah is talking about Shalava Amanas Shaloy Lifraya. He borrowed the money on condition that the other guy cannot demand of him to pay. So he will pay when he feels like it, but the other guy does not have the ability to demand it from him. So therefore, so now, in that case, then we can say that Reuben can say to Shimon, look, why should I have to reimburse you? It was an open-ended choiv. I was only obligated to pay it when I felt like it. I could have said I don't feel like it for the next 50 years and I wouldn't have to pay. Why should I now have to reimburse you just because you decided to step in and be the good guy and pay off my Baal choiv? Now, so those are the two explanations. So now the question is, why Rav Oshia doesn't like Rava's answer and vice versa? The Shlema Rava like Amakir Rav Oshia. Now we can understand why Rava does not want to answer like Rav Oshia, Jemokim Rav Kirabonim. He would prefer to say that Mishnah in the Dorim, which is a Stam Mishnah, goes like everybody. Rather than having to say it's only like Chonon in our Mishnah, he would rather say that the Chachamim, that the Bnei Koinim, Golem, and Rav Yechon Ben Zakkai agree with it. Rav Dosa Ben Hokinas, rather, agree with it. Ela Rav Oshia, my time like Amakir Rava, but why does Rav Oshia not answer like Rava? That we're talking about a special kind of loan. And the answer is Amalach Rav Oshia, because Rav Oshia will answer you. Nihi dahana leslay. Granted, you could say that there's no specific hana, because again, Reuben has the ability to say, I could have said for the next 50 years that I don't feel like paying this loan. Why should I now have to pay you? He suffer me leslay. But wouldn't there at least be embarrassment? At least every time Reuben sees the malva, he's going to be embarrassed that he hasn't paid yet. So therefore, there is that hana. So if Shimon goes and pays off the debt, he is giving Reuben a hana in the sense that now he's not embarrassed anymore. And the Gemara continues now you have the Gois Marav Ranshburg takes out the next line of the Gemara because it's basically repeating the same thing as Gemara just said, just in different words. Agois Habach instead says Lishna Achrina. It's a different Loshna. It's a different way of saying the same thing. Hosam Nami Islay Hana, namely that in that case also Reuben has Hana, Bahi da Hana Mixit Mine, the Hana that otherwise he was embarrassed of his Baal Chov all this time. Every time he sees him, he thinks to himself, his conscience is bothering him, you know, I still haven't paid back this guy for the loan that he gave him. So therefore, if Oshia says that would be considered a Hana, therefore the only way to make that Mishnah work would be according to Chanan of our Mishnah.
Who says that we can't hold anybody to paying him
b'chlal. Again, according to Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Hanano, specifically in the case of a husband and wife, and according to all the other Rishonim, in the general case of any kind of milva, because he could have sweet talked him into forgiving it or something.
How can you infer that someone's embarrassment is giving an hana to
just the opposite, taking away that embarrassment is considered a hana. Yeah, that's what we're saying. Taking away that embarrassment is considered a hana. Yeah, well, I mean, we're going to learn the next, you know, we're starting the Masechta Nedarim later this week, Pastor Sean. We're going to deal in the middle of the Masechta. We're going to deal with all these things of what's considered hana and what's not, and we're going to see. We're going to get some definitions of what hana is for these purposes. So now we went through the two halachas where Chanan disagrees with the Chachamim. Now let's go through the seven that Admon disagrees. We said that the two Dayan Exeris, Chanan disagreed with the Chachamim on two things, Admon disagreed with them on seven. So now our Mishnah and the next couple of Mishnahs are going to go through the seven dinim that Admon disagreed with the Chachamim. Number one. So Admon and the Shiva, so we said that Admon disagreed with the other Chachamim on seven things. The first one is a case from Baba Basra. The Mishnah says, Misha mes v'hiniach bonim ubonis. A man died, he left behind sons and daughters. So, bizman sha nechosim merubin. If the nechosim are large, which the Gemara explained, now, we learned earlier in our Masechta that the daughters, there's a takonis chachamim, part of the Tanoi Ksuba, that the daughters are entitled to be supported out of the estate until each of them becomes a begeres or gets married. So now, nechosim merubin would be where there's enough to do that, as well as to still give a Yerusha to the sons. The Gemara in Baba Basra actually has a Machlokas Rav and Shmuel how long it would have to be that it was available for the daughters, 12 months, or all the way until they become Bogres or marry, as the case may be, whatever the case. If the Nechasim are Merubim, fine, no problem. Habonim Yoshim, the sons inherit, Habonis Nizonis, and the daughters are entitled to their Mizonis. So their brothers will support them. Or the nechasim mu'atim. Now, what if the nechasim are little, so there's not enough to provide for both the sons and the daughters? Rashi mentions over here, according to one of the opinions over there, that it means that there's not even 12 months worth of mezonos for the daughters. The Gemara mentions over there another opinion that there is, but not, there's enough for 12 months, but not enough for the whole time until they become bogrus, whatever. So then, habonet yizonu, then the daughters have first rights, they get to have their mezonos. Habonim yachsu al psachim. The sons, if they don't have enough to support them, they can go around begging by the doors. They can go collect zakat, in other words. So he was where? Admon Omer, Vishvil Shani Zohar of Sadi. So Admon says, just because I'm a boy, do I lose out? In other words, why should the boys lose out? Now, Tosfos discusses over here, is Admon actually disagreeing with the Chachamim or not? Is he disagreeing with them as a matter of halacha and saying, I hold that we would not say the girls have first rights. I would say that everybody just divides it equally among themselves. Or is Admon maybe saying, I don't understand the reason behind the halacha. I'll accept the halacha that that's how it is, but I don't understand what the logic behind it is. So we learned because we said the daughters have the rights, but still Admon would say that since, as the Gemara is going to say, in a case where there are nechasim merubim, the sons have first rights, so why are we completely taking away their rights in favor of the girls? So according to one possibility in Tosfos, Rabbi Natan says in Tosfos, he's just wondering why are the Chachamim saying this. He's not disagreeing as a matter of halacha. And the Mishnah continues, Omer Rabbi Gamliel, Roya Anias, Divrei Admon. So Rabbi Gamliel says, I see what Admon is saying. In other words, I accept what he's saying as being logical. So if we say he's actually disagreeing, then it means that Rabbi Gamliel holds the halacha like Admon. If we say that Admon is just wondering why should it be so, then Rabbi Gamliel is saying, you're right, you know, there is a good reason to wonder about it.
Well, okay. They work together. I mean, you don't know what each one had in mind.
No, but you know,
and logic I understand. But
yeah,
to say that halacha is like him.
No, that, well, that, to say that Rabbi Gamliel is a Tana, he's entitled to pass in the halacha like Admon.
But if he's saying the logic,
Tosfos says Ela Mishum Shor Yesh Vaday L'Tmoya. There is indeed what to wonder about. In other words, according to that explanation, Rabbi Gamliel would be saying Admon has a good point. As a matter of halacha, the halacha is anyway, even Admon agrees the halacha is like the Chachamim, says Rabbi Natan. But Rabbi Gamliel was saying, I understand that when Admon makes this point, he has a very good point. It's true, it is strange that the Chachamim, that is strange that the Chachamim of an earlier generation who made this takana, made it this way. So the Gemara asks, my Ka'amar, what is this statement of Admon, Bishvil Shani Zohar of Sadi? What is that supposed to mean? The implication is, in other words, that there's a case where the Zohar has a stronger position, and therefore we say, because of that, now should I lose out? What's the stronger position that the Zohar has? So, Omer Abaya Hochkama, Vishvil Shani Zohar V'roi Lasek Batorah, because I'm a boy, he doesn't mean himself, of course, he means, let's say, a boy in this scenario might say, because I'm a boy, and I'm roi to learn Torah, if Sadi, therefore now I should lose out? Omalei Rava, but Rava says to Abaya, that can't be what Admon means. In that case, Manda Osik Batoda Hu Yoris, Manda Le Osik Batoda La Yoris. So what would that mean? Only a boy who learns Torah is entitled to Yarshin, and a boy who doesn't learn Torah is not entitled to Yarshin? Which Tosfos points out, it is true, we learned earlier in the Masechta, there is more of a mitzvah to support the boys than the girls, precisely because the boys learn Torah. Nevertheless, though, the point is that that's true, Tosfos says, as far as Rabbi Natan says, as far as Mizonah, sure, but as far as Yerusha is Minat Torah. There's no distinction Minat Torah whether a boy is learning Torah or whether he chooses to stay in Amoritz. So why should, so Admon is saying, why are we completely setting aside, Rava is saying, you Abaya are saying the difference is whether he learns Torah or not, but in terms of the dinim of Yerusha, there should be no difference in that. So why would Admon even be mentioning that point? Then the Baal Shal also points out that the Rava's problem is, with it is because Admon's Loshen, Bishvil Shani Zohar, Sadi, there's no hint, if Admon meant to distinguish between Chacham, between boys who learn Torah and boys who don't learn Torah, then his expression, instead of Bishvil Shani Zohar, he should be saying something like Bishvil Shaheim Zoharim, Hifsidu, and then we would understand that we mean they are boys, namely that they have a chiyuv to learn Torah, which the girls don't. So Elo Amar Rava Hachi Kama. What Admon means is Bishvil Shani Zohar V'Roy Lirash Menachosim Merubin. Just because I'm a boy, and if there had been more Nachosim, then I would in fact be the one to inherit, because the boys inherit, the girls don't inherit. If Sadim Menachosim Muatim, therefore should I have to lose out just because there are Nachosim Muatim? And therefore Admon is arguing again, either One possibility in Tosfos is that Admon is disagreeing as a matter of halacha and saying that therefore they should all just split it equally. And according to the second possibility in Tosfos, that Admon is not actually arguing. He's just saying, I don't understand the reason why the chachamim of the earlier generations who made up this takana, why they would say it that way.
But the reason why they made it, it's written very clearly. You don't know why they made it.
Well, we know why the girls are entitled to their mizonos. But the point is, Admon is saying, why should that takana override the boys' rights to the extent that the boys yishalu al psachim, that they have to go around begging by the doors? Instead, we should all just split it up evenly, and then once the money is used up, then we'll figure out what we do. Okay, so that's the first thing that Admon disagrees with the chachamim. The second thing the Mishnah says, Hatoynas chaveda kadesh shemen. Reuven claims to Shimon, you owe me a certain number of barrels of oil. The other one, Shimon says, I agree that I owe you a certain number of empty barrels. The Shittim Kobetzis points out that the word kade refers to full ones and the word kankanim refers to empty ones, which is why you have the different terminology. Anyway. So, right. I mean, in the Gemara also, we're going to be using the word kankanim malay. So it's not a hard and fast rule that kankanim always means empty ones. But in the Mishnah, at least in the terminology of the Mishnah, we can say that the difference is kade shemen suggests full ones and kankanim suggests empty ones. Anyway, Admon Omer. Now, we know a general concept called Moedim HaMichtas. We know the Torah tells us, we learn it from Sukkim, that if Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me $100, and Shimon says, no, I only owe you $50, we know that Shimon's going to have to take a shore. But now, in this case, Reuven says, you owe me X number of barrels of oil. The other one says, I owe you X number of empty barrels. So Admon says, well, he's admitting to part of the claim. Yeshava, therefore he has to swear, like any Moedim HaMichtas. Because what he's agreeing to is not considered part of the Taina, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. Now, you have a classic case that it describes in the Mishnayos in Shavuos called Tane Chitim Behodeloi B'Sa'odim. If Reuben says, you owe me X amount of wheat, and Shimon says, no, but I owe you X amount of barley, that's not considered Moedim HaMichtas. Actually, you have an opinion of Rav Gamliel on the Mishnah there in Shavuos, who says that it does, but the Chachamim disagree with that. The Gemara is going to mention that point, and we're going to go through it. So now, the Chachamim are saying, this is in effect, like Tane Chitim Behodeloi B'Sa'odim. So, like in the previous Mishnah, Rav Gamliel says, I see what Admon is saying. In other words, I accept that Admon's logic is valid. In other words, Rav Gamliel is saying, in short, I hold the halacha would be like Admon. Which later on in the parak we're going to discuss. In these cases, we're going to learn tomorrow, actually, Bez Hashem, that in these cases, when Rav Gamliel says the halacha is like Admon, then it means, in fact, the halacha is like him. So we'll discuss that tomorrow, Bez Hashem.
Against the
Chum. Against the Chum, yeah. So the Gemara asks, now it seems that we can derive from what the Chachamim are saying that suppose that Reuven says you owe me X amount of wheat and X amount of barley, and Shimon says no, I only owe you barley. Potter, it sounds like Chachamim are saying that Shimon will be potter from Ashura. Because what do we have over here? Reuven is saying you owe me X number of barrels of oil, which means he's claiming the barrels as well as the oil. And the other guy is saying, no, I only owe you the barrels. And the Chachamim are saying, Ein hodah mixtus minataina. So it sounds like in a parallel case of Chitim Osa'odim, it sounds like Chachamim would say he's potter. The problem with that is that would contradict what Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel. He says that in such a case, Shimon would be chayim. That is considered Moedim HaMichtas because Reuven said, you owe me wheat and barley. And he says, I owe you the barley. And Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel that that's considered Moedim HaMichtas. But it comes out from our Mishnah according to the Chachamim that we would say that not. I'm saying, Ein hodah minataina. In fact, Tosfos points out that we said before that Rav Gamliel agrees with Admon, and we're going to learn tomorrow that means the halacha is like Admon. So what's the problem? So what if Rav Nachman is contradicted by the Chachamim? The halacha is like Admon anyway. Tosfos says no. Admon would agree in the case of Chitim U'Sa'odim, because the very fact that Admon presents the case as talking about barrels of wine, barrels of oil, which the Gemara is going to point out soon, a barrel of oil is almost like a fruit inside its shell. You need the barrels in order to preserve the oil. So in that case, Admon and the Chachamim are going to be disagreeing, is that considered Moedim Mitzvahs or not? But in a case of wheat and barley, where neither one of them depends on the other, Admon would in fact agree that that's not considered Hajam Minatayna, it's not considered Moedim Mitzvahs. So now the question is, if neither Admon nor the Chachamim hold that it's Moedim Mitzvahs, in the case of Chitim HaSoedim, then how can Rav Nachman be telling us that it is? That's how Tosfos explains it. No, because the case of our Mishnah is not talking about that he's saying that I want, that I, like, you owe me barrels as well as oil. He's saying, I left X amount of oil by you. When he says cabbage shemen, he doesn't mean barrels plus oil. He means the amount of oil that would fit in 10 barrels, let's say. So now, when he's saying, I was masked by you, let's say, for example, each barrel holds a 100 gallons. So he's saying, I was masked by you 1,000 gallons of oil, where is it? And the guy answers, I agree that I owe you 10 barrels, each of which holds 100 gallons, but just the barrels themselves. He's not mentioning the oil. So it's not hojom and minatayna, because he's saying oil and the other guy is saying barrels. The question is, Yochi, my time of the Admon. Well, then why would Admon consider that Mimina Taina? It is exactly like Chitim and Sorodim. Which it is true. Tosfos says that Rav Gamliel in the Mishnah there in Shavuos holds that Tane Chitim Bahodel of the Sorodim Chayim. However, we're trying to work it out according to Rav Nachman. The halacha is not like Rav Gamliel over there. The halacha is that if Reuven says Chitim and Shimon says Sa'odim, he's Potter. We're trying to work out Admon's opinion according to Rav Nachman, and the halacha is not like Rav Gamliel. The halacha is like Rav Nachman, and only Tane Chitim Behodel of Sa'odim, he'd be Potter. So we can't use the fact that Rav Gamliel holds that in a case like that, a person is Chayim, because the Chacham holds he's Potter, and the halacha in that is like a Chacham against Rav Gamliel. So according to Admon, so in other words, how would Rav Nachman understand Admon's shita then? Why would Admon in our Mishnah be considering a Moedim Mitzvahs? If Reuben says you owe me 1,000 gallons of oil, and the other guy says I owe you 10 empty barrels, then yes, yeah, that's Chitim and Sodom. El Omar Rava, no. So Rava says Dikulei Alma. No, it would be like this. Everybody would agree, both Admon and the Chachamim, Heicha de Amalei Meloi Asora Kadesh Shemen Yesli Bebocha, if he tells him that I was masked by you, for example, the amount that will go in 10 barrels of oil are in your burr, or in your pit, which is where when they press oil, it all flows into a pit, and then afterwards they collect it from there into barrels. So then, shemen katoin lay kan kanim lay katoin lay. There's no question then that he's arguing only that you owe me shemen and not kan kanim, and therefore if the other guy says that I owe you kan kanim, there's no question that's like saying you owe me chitim, and the other one says I owe you sa'odim, where there's no shavua. It's not modim mitzvahs. Which, by the way, the Smeh and the Shach disagree with that in Shulchan Aruch. What the focus is. Is it because he's saying Meloi Asara Kadesh Shemen? He's using the word Meloi, which clearly means that he means the amount of oil rather than the number of barrels. Or is it because that's what the Smeh says? And the Shach says because he says Beborcha, it's in your pit. We're in the pit. You don't need barrels to keep it. So therefore, obviously, isn't it? So either way, whether because he's mentioning the amount of oil rather than the number of barrels, or whether because he's mentioning that's in your pit, implying that he doesn't need barrels at all, then therefore, when the other guy says, I owe you barrels, then it's not Mimin Hatayim. So therefore, there's no more dimensions. On the other hand, if he says, Asara Kadesh Shemin Malayin Yeshli Etzlecha, on the other hand, if Reuben says that I deposited by you 10 full barrels of oil, and the other one says I owe you empty barrels, then for sure, Shemin v'kantanim katoin lay, then there's no question that Reuben is arguing, is claiming both Shemin, claiming both oil and barrels, and when the other guy says only barrels, that would be the equivalent of chitim u'sa'orim, and therefore then according to Rav Nachman, he would be chayav to swear. Both Admon and the Chachamim would agree with that. So in the first, so either if Reuven says you owe me only oil and Shimon says I owe you only barrels, everybody will agree he's Potter. And vice versa, if Reuven says you owe me barrels full of oil and the other one says I owe you empty barrels, then he would be chayav to swear, at least according to Rav Nachman. Because then Moedim Mitzvahs, because then if I treat him with oil, then if I say you owe me wheat and barley and the other one is saying I owe you only barley. The machloikus would be strictly when he says, I have 10 barrels of oil by you. So he didn't say Malayim. He didn't say 10 full barrels. He just said Asore Kadeshem. Admon Omer Yesh Bazet Maloshin Azaloshin Kankanim. So now Admon is going to say, by saying 10 barrels of oil implies both barrels and oil. But Rabbanan Sabri Ein Baloshin Azaloshin Kankanim. The Chum say no. It means only the amount of oil that would fit in 10 barrels. And therefore, when the other guy says, I owe you only barrels, then it's not Modim Mitzas. So the Gemara asks, okay, so fine, so far so good. But Ella, time of the in Beloshin as Eloshin Kantanim. Okay, so how have we explained the Mishnah then? That was saying specifically when he says, Asora Kabe Shemin Yeshli Ephra, and was saying that according to the Chachamim, that does not imply Kantanim. Ho Yesh Beloshin as Eloshin Kantanim. Now the implication would seem to be, that if that Loshen, if we were going to learn like Admon and say that that does imply barrels, or if there was a different Loshen that implies barrels, then Chayev, then we would say he's Chayev. The problem now becomes, Lema Tevet Yuvda, de Rav Chiya Ba'aba. The problem is now that this would then contradict what Rav Chiya Ba'aba says, where Rav Chiya Ba'aba disagrees with Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel in that Gemara and in Shavuos and says that if Tane Chitim was Sa'orim, Bahodilo was Sa'orim, Reuben said you owe me wheat and barley, and Shimon says I owe you only barley, Shmuel had said he's Chayev, that's to swear, that's what he said. But Rav Chiya Ba'aba holds his potter. So now, the Amar Rav Chiya Ba'aba, Tane Chitim was Sa'orim, Bahodilo Ba'achas man potter. So, Be'echav Mehem Potter. So he says that in that case, he'd be Potter. Now, in Or Mishnah then, was saying that Or Mishnah is specifically about a case where they use a Loshen, where he uses a Loshen that may or may not include barrels, and that's what Admon and the Chachamim are arguing about. But in other words, if he had used a Loshen that unequivocally means barrels as well as oil, then they would both agree he's Chayev. But according to Rav Chiya Ba'aba, he'd be Potter in such a case. So how are we learning Or Mishnah then? The answer is Amr Shimi Ba'ashi, Nas the Kamisha Tano Rimun Bikut Pasay. So Rashi explains, so what? Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba is disagreeing with Rabbi Nachman. He doesn't have to shtelai in the Mishnah that we're talking about a specific Loshen like that. But Rashi says, the fact that the Mishnah itself used the word Hatoinus Haberi Kade Shemin, rather than the Mishnah could have said Kade Malayim Shemin, suggests more like Rabbi Nachman than in fact he did not use the word Kade Malayim Shemin. Because then Rav Nachman would agree, where then Rav Nachman would say that everybody would say he's chayav to swear. So the very fact, the wording of the Mishnah itself supports what Rav Nachman is saying. Well, once we do that, then how is Rav Chiya Ba'aba going to learn the Mishnah? And the answer is, Amar Rav Shimi Ba'ashi, Nasik Mishatano Rimon Bikrit Pasay. Because the difference is, he says, Chitim was Sa'orim, each one stands by itself. As opposed to over here, barrels and oil, the oil needs to be in the barrels. So therefore, it's the equivalent of Reuben saying, you owe me a pomegranate inside its shell, and the other one is saying, no, I owe you a pomegranate without its shell. That for sure would be considered modim mitzvahs. Even Rav Chiya Ba'aba is going to say, they have to swear on that. So therefore, the same thing over here with the oil and the barrels. But Maskefler Rabina, but Rabina says, how can you compare them? Rimen v'leku poser le'mitar. A pomegranate is not going to last without its shell, without its peel. Shemen mintar v'lekankanim. But oil, you don't necessarily need barrels for it. You can keep it in the pit. You can keep it in the pit, in the ground, and it'll stay there just as well. Rather, Rav Chiya Ba'aba is going to have to understand our Mishnah that Reuven says, I have 10 barrels of oil by you. But Amalei Idach, and Shemin says, Shemin lehoyu dvarim olam. As far as the oil, that never happened. You never deposited oil by me. Kankanim nami. And as far as the barrels, you're saying it was 10 barrels. Chamisha islach v'chamisha lesma. It's only 5 barrels that you deposited by me. So now, Admon on the Yesh Beloshin Azer Loshin Kankanim. So now, Admon says that when the first one said Asora Kadesh Shemin Yesh Liatzecha, it does imply the barrels. Not like we said that. So according to Rav Nachman, we said Admon and the Chachamim are disagreeing on precisely that point. Does Asora Kadesh Shemin imply barrels as well, or does it just mean the amount that would take 10 barrels? Now, Rav Chiya Ba'aba is saying no. Asora Kadesh Shemin definitely means barrels as well. We're still going to say that Admon and the Chachamim are disagreeing. We're still going to say, according to him, that Admon and the Chachamim are going to be disagreeing. Is the Loshen, Asora Kadesh Shemen, does that imply barrels or not? But now we have, the twist is, Rav Chiya Abba is saying that the machloikas in our Mishnah is where the other guy is saying, I'm denying the shemen altogether, and as far as the kankanim, I'm agreeing to only some of them. So only 5 out of 10. So now, Admon, I mean, yesh v'loshen as v'loshen kankanim. So Admon is going to say, when he says asorah kadesh shemen, that implies barrels as well as oil, not just the amount of oil that would fill 10 barrels, but 10 actual barrels as well as the oil in them. So, now, Admon is going to say, as far as the kankanim, he's going to have to swear, because there it's modu mitzvahs. He's saying, you owe me 10 kankanim, the other one says, I owe you only 5. That's classic modu mitzvahs. And because he's swearing on that, mishtaba, nami asheben, ayde gilgul. Now we can use gilgul shvua. As long as he's making him take a shvua on the 5 kankanim, he can also include in that, that you're swearing that you don't owe me any oil. So that's what Admon is saying. But Rabbanan Sabri, ain't the Loshen as a Loshen Kankanim. The Chachamim are saying the Loshen, Asorah Kadesh Shemen, does not suggest barrels at all. It suggests that you owe me 1,000 gallons of oil, because I deposited 1,000 gallons of oil with you. He's not saying anything about Kankanim. So now, Mashatane Lahodilo, Mashahodi Lahotane, now it's a classic case of Chitim Wasaodim, where he says, you owe me oil, and the other one says, no, all I owe you is barrels, and it's two different things, chitim and sa'orim, and therefore there's no mode of mitzvahs, and therefore there's no way to make him swear at all, not even on the 5 kankanim, let alone on the shem.
We could have said that if he didn't mean kadim, you could have said wells of oil.
No, but the fact, when he uses that sort of kadesh shemen, think of it, it's like in English, for example, imagine if you said, for example, 10 tankers of oil. Does that mean the actual tankers, or does it mean the amount of oil that would fill up 10 tankers? So it could mean
a degree beyond what the Chachamim are saying. It could mean unfilled. If you compare the two Mishnayos, one says Mare, and then one doesn't say Mare, so you could think the second Mishnah means half full or three quarters full. But still,
well, there's no other mission over here. What we said is, if he says Maloy Asorah Kadesh Shemen, then definitely we say that means full barrels. But here, we just have Kadesh Shemen, that it could mean the barrels plus the oil, or it could mean just the oil without the barrels. And so, the Priya Ba'aba is going to say that is precisely what Admon and the Chachamim are over
there. 1 second. The Mishnah says Maloy Kadesh Shemen, right?
No, the Mishnah didn't say anything about Maloy. In the Gemara,
but I'm saying, if the Mishnah doesn't say Maloi, then it could mean Kadesh Shemel that are filled completely or filled half or three quarters, but still.
Maybe, I mean, I guess the assumption would be that people usually keep their barrels as full as possible so the oil doesn't go rancid.
No, not necessarily. No.
Especially if we're talking about the deposit in them long term, we probably assume that.
You can dispute. I mean, there's no proof in itself that it means filled.
Okay, well, whatever. When he says Asorah Kadesh Shemen, we assume, unless otherwise specified, that it means barrels filled to the brim. The only question is, are we including the barrels or not? And that's what Admon and the Chacham are disagreeing on.
That's my point. Why do we assume that, on which basis, and why?
Well, let's put it this way. If Shimon wants to counterclaim and says, yes, there were 10 barrels, but they weren't full, fine, we can deal with that. That'll be motive mixtus on the oil. But we're not dealing with that. We're talking about where Shimon is saying, I don't owe you any oil, period. All I owe you is 5 empty barrels. That's according to the Priya Ba'aba. And again, according to the Bachman, we were saying that he's saying, you're saying that I owe you X number of that I owe you 10 barrels full of oil, and I'm saying that I only owe you the barrels. So only according to the Priya Ba'aba that he's saying I only owe you some of the barrels. According to the Nachman, we don't need that, because the barrels and the oil are like chitim and soy.
Which is not self-evident, actually, because the oil and chitim and soy, you have to contain them in something.
That's what we said before. Tosfos did say that according to Admon, we would say there is a difference between chitim and sa'orim versus barrels and oil, to the extent that Admon would agree by chitim and sa'orim that if one says chitim and the other one says sa'orim, that you're potter. Only Rav Gamliel says you'd be chayev, and we're saying Admon would disagree with Rav Gamliel on that. Fine. But other than that, the basic comparison is valid, that if Reuven is saying you owe me X and Shimon says you owe me, and Shimon says instead I owe you Y, then that would be potter. the machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Chiya Ba'Abba would be strictly where he says you owe me X and Y, and the other one says I owe you only Y. Is he chayav to swear or not? Rav Nachman is saying yes. Rav Chiya Ba'Abba is saying no.
Okay.
Shalom, everyone.